Blog Talk Radio.
We've been waiting for a long time. Yes, we've been waiting for a long time. We've been waiting for a long time. But we ain't gonna wait no more. We're getting ready to rock and roll. We're gonna 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3. Well, there's the reason everybody should be taking in the house tonight. And you should grab your baby lady and promise her you'll do it right.
Yes, the boys are back. It didn't take that long this time, but we are back on this 28th of June 2014. Welcome to this special edition of the Cyril Quinn Review NBA Wrap-Up Show Part 2. Last year was the first anniversary of the NBA Wrap-Up Show. This is the second one, and this one's going to even be better. So I'm putting the pressure on everybody on game day. As always, your host, Cyril Quinn. I'm joined by my esteemed colleagues, Robert Sapp.
Yo.
Welcome to the program. And Chad the Nick Quinn. Welcome to the program.
They call me.
The Nick Insider. Welcome to the program. As always, the call number is 347-215-6180, though I doubt anybody that calls in will get a chance to get a word in. But you know what? Call in anyway. I can't discourage phone calls. Call in anything. Anyway, two things I want to get out the way real quick. Number one, congratulations to the now five-time NBA champion San Antonio Spurs. They are now in the top 3%. NBA franchises of all time behind Celtics, Lakers, and Bulls. And to be honest with you, they've been, you know, the consistency that they had versus the Bulls, you can go back and forth with that, but the Bulls do have 6 championships. So they are now 4th all time in championships. Duncan gets number 5, Popovich number 5, Parker, Ginobili number 4. Just a dominant, to say the least, performance over the Miami Heat, the most lopsided finals I've ever seen in NBA history. And the second thing is, for my World Cup soccer fans, is 1-1 at halftime, Brazil and Chile. So those two things I wanted to get out the way before we proceed. Any last second thoughts on what the Spurs did quickly?
Wow. They're just a blueprint. Yeah. Wow. The best.
They just win.
They just win.
The last thing I'll say about the Spurs is that I'll never say it's over until it's over. So they'll be back in the finals next year. I'm not going to leave it alone. I'm done.
Yep. Unless you're trying that reverse jinx, the count the Spurs just makes no sense. They are clearly the NBA blueprint. But we begin this program by talking about the story of the NBA, and it has been the story for the better part. Even in the finals, it was a story, and that is, of course, the Miami Heat. The Heat go into this offseason with as much, you know, question marks as they had, as they've ever had, since they came together in 2010, back in the summer 2010. So LeBron opts out, and we're still waiting on Bosh and Wade to see what they are going to do. I don't think there was any surprise about the LeBron opt out. The kind of alarming thing about it was probably how quickly it came. And the thought process behind that was probably that he wanted to allow teams to configure their rosters, whether it's not cutting players, but trading players, acquiring picks, things of that nature, shedding cap space to give them a better chance to possibly come at him. So that was probably the thing that would make Miami fans nervous in terms of LeBron possibly leaving Miami. What did you think initially when you heard about the LeBron opt-out?
Rob, let's take this one first.
Okay. All right. I wasn't surprised at all. I texted Cyril. I was like, LeBron and Carmelo to the Lakers? Put a question mark. You know, so it's kind of like it's time for that craziness to begin. If you looked at him at the end of that finals, there was no way that you thought he wasn't going to exercise that option. Like he looked around and you could just see it was just like, wait, hold on, this is Cleveland all over again. It's me against everybody else. So you could definitely see that coming. So it didn't shock me at all.
Yeah, I agree. It was no shock. And I think the ass whooping they took made it a lot easier to make this move so swiftly. I think if they had a really battle with San Antonio, he would have had more of an argument. Like, maybe we can't. There was no second thinking this thing right here. So, like you said, Cyril, he wanted to give teams time, but also just to kill the whole Pat Riley. I mean, when Pat Riley came out and spoke, every analyst, every report was talking about, wow, he really put the pressure on the team and told everyone to chill out. No, LeBron said, look, I got the power here. I'm opting out. Let's do this. You know, and also gives Dwayne Wade and Bosch time to get their thoughts together.
Yeah, keep this in mind. The Pat Riley thing was I found hysterical. That's comical. Because I knew it carried no weight at all, but other than just the fact that it was Pat Riley speaking, he hadn't spoken of like 6 or 7 months to the media. So it was just funny to me. I like this. Anybody, somebody, psychological warfare. Like, yeah, sure. To understand this, in today's NBA, the NBA has always been a players' league, as we all know. The best players have always had the most power. LeBron James, powerful player in NBA history, considering how these contracts are formatted, how short these contracts are, and considering his age at 29. Like, he can go literally any team he wanted to. He can go to any team he wanted to go, and that team would move. It would move mountains to try to get him. So, yes, he clearly has all the power, number one. And number two, understand this, too, going to, as a little background, LeBron is not happy with the Miami Heat organization right now. So I think that contributed to how him opting out as quickly as he opted out. Because the Miami Heat chose to amnesty Mike Miller. They had a trade exception that they didn't. They had a mid-level exception that they did not use. They moved Joel Anthony's contract. They chose basically to try to shed cap space. I mean money because in terms of the luxury tax, because they didn't want to pay the luxury tax going into next year. They paid it this year, but they didn't want to go pay it into next year. So LeBron thing is like, look, we're packing the building every night. We're the most popular team in the NBA. I'm the most popular player. What are you talking about? We don't have the money. So he's not happy with Mickey. And this is not Pat Riley. This is Pat Riley. We know he's a don, but he answers to Mickey Arison when it comes to the money, from the money standpoint. So this is more about LeBron being upset. Some of this is about LeBron being upset with the Heat organization with not providing him with enough help over the course of the season in terms of going for their three-peat. They basically came back with the same team. Greg Oden and Michael Beasley were like, okay, good luck with that. I mean, even coming – those were just, throwing darts in the dark, basically, with those particular acquisitions. So that's
what
I thought
about.
Well,
I also think, I agree with everything that you're saying, and I also think that – this is why the big three, these guys coming together, was like such a shift, because the reason why LeBron is the most powerful player in NBA history, and I 100% agree with that, is of the tone of today's athlete, particularly in basketball. where they're allotted this much power, where there's no brand loyalty anymore, right? Like before, you know, even thinking about like when Tim Duncan was like flirting with the different teams and Kobe was having his like little flirtation with different teams, there was still that sense of, I am a Spur, I am a Laker first,
right,
and somebody's just going to have to come out and just like blow me out of the water with all that. With LeBron and with what happened with the Big Three, you can see it reverberate all around the league, a la, you know, Dwight Howard just being like, no, fuck the Lakers. F the Lakers. This is, you know, whatever, to this history, I'm going somewhere else. It's about my happiness, about my peace of mind, the way that I think. And I feel like LeBron is like the epitome of that. I've heard the word mercenary used a lot, and like how people are sensitive, and LeBron might be sensitive to the idea of being a mercenary. But I think there's a definitive shift that has happened, particularly marked by the Big Three, where it's not about what team you're on. It's about how I, as a player, feel about where I'm at. And that's the difference, and that's what creates the most – that's what gives them the most leverage, because Pat Riley can't just say, or Mickey Arians can't just say, hey, we're the Heat, you should stay with us.
Right, and I add two quick points to that, to what you're saying, about this whole shift from loyalty. I think we use that word loosely because, to Surreal's point, back in the day, they had these ridiculous contracts where it wasn't even about loyalty. You're signed for 10 years. You're staying there.
Yeah.
You know, so I would be very interested to see Jordan and the Barclays of the world if they had five-year contracts. We all know how Jordan felt about management in Chicago. Shorter contracts, who knows? I'm just saying, hypothetically speaking. And then second, what gives the LeBrons of the world or the Dwight Howards of the world so much power, besides the contract, is that owners are baffled because it's ironically not all about money with these guys. So that's a huge element, you know, when the first thing, like, oh, he'll never leave because they got to take pay cut. They took him, you know.
Yep.
They took the cuts. They're going to teams now with less money. The idea of, you know, the Mellos of the world even leaving their franchise for less money is a real reality now, because it's like, oh, okay, these players are willing to just be happy and have peace of mind knowing that because of endorsements and other things, they'll make up the money some other way. So the owners have to do more now. It's not just, well, we can pay the most money. It's that simple. Not anymore. You know, so it's dangerous territory for them.
Now, go ahead.
The landscape is definitely different. Jordan didn't become a free agent until like his 12th year in the league, and then he signed those, you know, the contracts that, you know, paid him like $30 million a year. Kobe, you know, has only been a free agent once, unrestricted, and that's because he signed these mega extensions, like the last one he signed, not this previous one, but the one that he signed for like 3 years, $83 million, something like that. So it is a different – the landscape is much different. I mean, even 10 years ago, I mean, Kobe's contract 10 years ago when he signed in 2004 was 7 years, $140 million. The owner said, you know what, we're going to shorten these contracts. So in a way, it hasn't backfired towards the owners because they're still making money hand over foot, but it creates a more fluid NBA in terms of star and player – definitely player movement.
What the owners wanted was to have the shorter contracts for the losers. If they could have put that clause in there, if you're a franchise player, no, we keep you. Perhaps. But they couldn't do that. They couldn't find the right terminology to separate the Gilbert Arenas of the world and LeBron.
It's so true.
So the Big Three. Well, you know what? I should have wrote a note to myself that I was going to stop saying that. LeBron and the little two. Because there's no Big Three anymore. There's no Big Three in Miami anymore. There's no Big Three in San Antonio. There's no Big Three in Miami.
LeBron and them.
LeBron and them. Met last week. They met last week. who knows what was discussed amongst them. But the bottom line is LeBron opted out, and Wade and Bosch have yet to opt out. And there seems to be a some speculation on why Wade and Bosch haven't opted out yet in terms of the market for both of them, the market being slim and nil for Wade and being the market being pretty good for Bosch, but not max, maybe not max contract good, but maybe max contract good, depending on which team, but especially for Wade
right.
in particular. So what is the thought process on, I mean, we can speculate all we want, what is the thought process on that meeting and what possibly Bosch and Wade will do moving forward?
Can I start on this one? I know
go
I started laughing.
Yeah.
I started on this one.
Go ahead.
I have a theory. I definitely want to get out. All right, so this is endlessly fascinating to me because my thought process is that Pat Riley is a gangster. He is the Don of the NBA. And so I have theorized that Pat Riley, back channels, he's trying to get Love and Carmelo. That's what I believe he's trying to do. Now, in order to do that, he has to get rid of Wade and Bosch, or at the very least get them to opt out and take a lot less money, particularly Wade. I believe
I don't mean to cut you off mainstream, but to get both of them, he would have to get rid of both Wade and Bosch.
Yeah, true. I know.
really?
And I believe that Pat Riley, people around, even LeBron, like Bosch would opt out. I believe that would be the case. Wade is like the sticking point. Because Wade, as we know, his skills have diminished so rapidly that it actually doesn't make sense for him to opt out. He should, for his personal being, take the money that's there, not opt out. Now, my theory is, and this has changed just a little bit, but my theory is that Pat Riley is like Gustavo. If anybody who watches Breaking Bad or anybody who's ever listened to the show knows I'm a huge Breaking Bad fan. And Pat Riley's like Gustavo Fring. And what he has to do and what he's trying to do is drive a wedge between LeBron and Wade. He needs Wade to opt out to make whatever. Let's just say it's not Carmelo and Love, however he wants to reconfigure that roster, and I do believe he wants to reconfigure that roster, Wade is the key that he needs to opt out. And so somehow, my conspiracy theory is that Pat Riley is playing these mind games, these mental things, subliminally trying to get LeBron to somehow convince Wade to opt out. All right, I'm done. That's my conspiracy theory.
I agree. I think this reminds me, because when Cyril, you know, you made the comment about reminding yourself to stop saying the big three. It's like when they needed to stop saying the Jackson Five. I remember when they were trying to convince Michael to do the reunion tour, and Michael was like, I'm good. You know what I mean? Now, in this case, Chris Bosh represents Jermaine, where Jermaine is like, I could do it on my own anyway. You know what I mean? I'd be good. And Wade is more of a hybrid of Randy and Tito. He's a old Randy hybrid, where he's trying to figure out, where do I go? Where do I fit in all of this? So I think the meeting of these guys, wherever they were in Miami, coming out with the cars, is a PR stunt. Because, look, they're friends. They can meet at home. I think they had to show this united front that, okay, LeBron made this commitment, opt out so quickly. But, no, we all knew it. We're all together. But they're not. They're not together. I think they're talking about it. and they're trying to see where LeBron is, because ultimately I think the nostalgia is where Bosh is. He loves the idea of the big three. We came in there together. We could figure this out. That's where Bosh has to be. Wade, his ego's in his way. You know what I mean? So he is the cancer of the group because he can't get out of his own way. And I think, you know, the smarts with Wade is that, okay, I have ego, but I'm also smart enough to realize that no one's probably going to pay me this money anywhere outside of Miami. So it's a really interesting place. Now, to Rob's point, I definitely think that Pat Riley is doing all this behind the scenes. As you can see, he's really not commented on LeBron or Wade or Bosh. And not to say that people have asked him a lot about Wade or Bosh. Everyone's asking about LeBron. But if you're an owner or a GM or president and you have these big three, you know these egos are very sensitive. So Pat Riley had every opportunity to continue to include Bosh and Wade in discussions when he's talking with the media. He hasn't, because we all know it's all about LeBron, and we'll figure all the other stuff out. We also know that part of the problem LeBron has with the organization is that they didn't get more help. So Wade and Bosh to opt in, I can't get more help. You know what I mean? So the writing is on the wall. They have to go in order for LeBron to stay. You know, and it's like trying to figure out this jigsaw puzzle with broken pieces. And it's like, so how can I make LeBron happy and keep Wade and Bosh? The only way that happens is if they all take less money to stay and bring in more talent. But at the same time, that still requires bringing in more talent. So no matter how you flip this, it's not going to be Wade, Bosh, and LeBron. It's going to be Wade, Bosh, LeBron, and Melo, Wade, Bosh, LeBron, Aldridge, Love. It has to be something else. So I just don't see, you know, that is the end of the era. We saw the end of that big three, you know. It's going to be interesting the next couple of days or whatever to see exactly what Bosh and Wade do. I think they make their decision on the same day together.
All right, so here's some background on where they were compared to where they're at. And I completely agree. I would compare those three guys to like this. Reality. LeBron James, best player in the world, one of the most popular athletes in the world. Nostalgia. I just said with Chris Bosh, wanted to keep it together, you know, South Beach, the whole nine. And delusion is Dwayne Wade. I'm still D Wade. I'm still Flash. I'm still the Finals MVP of 2006. So that's how I would characterize those three players right now. When they first got together in 2010, they had been talking about it going back to the 2008 Olympics. During that particular time period, they all had the same agent, okay? They had the same agent in 2010 when they got together. Ever since, and in terms of skill set, in terms of ability, you know, LeBron was the best, but Wade was a legit top five caliber player. Chris Bosh is a legit top 15 player. So they were even closer in that aspect. Now we fast forward to 2014. LeBron is his own entity. He has his own company he's signing Johnny Manziels. He's signing the big-time athletes, okay? I believe Wade and Bosh still have the same agent and with CAA, that particular company has a bunch of athletes. So they are at completely different places from 2010 to 2014. So I like, you know, just, you know, yeah, they get along, they have personal relationships, Wade and LeBron in particular, close off the court, whatever, but it's still about business. When it comes to LeBron, in terms of his legacy and how many championships he wants to win. Realistically, for them to stay together, all together, LeBron, those Wade and Bosh, the pay cut, have to take considerable pay cuts. I don't see LeBron taking a major pay cut. I think a pay cut for LeBron would be like $20 million. That's a pay cut to him, because really he could go for, he could make 22 to 24 million in terms of max. So 20 million, give, if I'm LeBron, I'm like, give me my 20 million, y'all two figure it out.
They have to take 10 each, maybe.
Yeah, they would have to, realistically, they would have to take 10 to 12 each. If they, listen, I'll try to do this without going crazy numbers, the salary cap next year is going to be at around 63 next year. It's going to be around 63.
Right.
It's going to be the salary cap. So 63, 64. Wade, LeBron takes 20. Let's say Bosh and Wade take 12 apiece. Okay, 12 apiece. That's what, 24, 44. So that leaves
24,
them, so 44. So that leaves them with plenty of space to go out there and sign a Gortat, Kyle Lowry, or maybe check out, make a run at Melo. But, you know, again, realistically, is Bosh, is Wade going to go from 20 to 12 million? You know, will Bosh go from 20 to 12 million? And the thing about Bosh is, people, everybody is down on Bosh. People are down on Bosh. Bosh has a market. You know, the Lakers, I'm telling you right now, the Lakers would sign Bosh in a heartbeat to a Houston. So he has a market. So I think, like, you know, I think if you're Pat Riley, you do whatever it takes to get those two guys, minimum one of those guys, to opt out. If you can get one of them to opt out, you can add pieces. If you get two of them, then you can go for Rob's theory of trying to go after Love and Melo possibly. But the bottom line is this thing. As far as you said, those three are playing together. I don't see a scenario where they all three play together ever again. I think it's fair to say that.
Yeah, I think what Pat Riley has to do, he has to take one page out of Phil Jackson's book, and we talked about this last time, where you throw it back on the players. Look, I really want to keep these guys together. Call out their names. I need Dwayne Wade to take a pay cut. I need Dwayne Wade to step up and take a pay cut. We love what he's done for the organization. But in order to get more talent, because he is ultimately that one. Like you said, with the numbers you throw out, if you have, you know, roughly $18 million, if you could get Melo for about, and he has to take a cut to come there as well, you know, 12 to 14, and you have another four sitting out, you're going to have a bunch of bums playing with these if two opt in or whatever. And depending on the cut that LeBron takes. But I think with Wade, because he's delusional to your point, you have to sit him down with the psychiatrist, of course, and ask him, like, do you realize how much better LeBron is than you? Because if he can grasp that concept, it's easier to digest that we should get paid the same amount of money. Like, everything in life is about knowing your worth, you know? So let's get rid of the whole Wade sacrifice, yada, yada talk. Let's not even talk about sacrifice anymore. We're talking about just talent. I'm more talented than you, way more. I have a bigger market. I'm going to get – and, like, these are conversations you have with your friends. You have – everyone has talents. You know what I mean? Like, we've all been out to club. If there's a cute group of girls, you don't send a loser to go talk to the girls. And he knows he's a loser. He just waits and hopes they come back. He say, all right, oh, no. You stay here, chill. All right, put your card and get the drink. You wait here patiently, and we'll bring back whatever we got. And we'll share. That's just how it works. No one, you know what? The only one that doesn't get it is the one that's the real loser that doesn't understand he's a loser. But most losers know. They know. All right, yeah. They might even point the girl out, you know? So I would go to Wade as the loser of the group. Hey, Wade, who do you think we should get, man? Oh, man, I think we should get Melo. I think he would fit. Yeah, he would fit. You know you're taking a cut, right? Yeah, I'm taking a cut. Okay, well, let's talk about that. Now we can work with your personality. Should we bring in Aldridge? Do you think Aldridge – do you want to play with Aldridge? I would love to play with Aldridge. Okay, you know you're taking a cut. Yeah, I'm taking a cut. Okay, well, you know, and that's how you have to humor these dudes. Once you let them identify who they are, I can work with you.
Keep this in mind. Go ahead, Rob.
Here's what I was going to say. This, you know, I'm thinking in, like, big analogies now. This is almost or that now just coming to my head now is like when Rockefeller broke up, right? Like Jay, like of course LeBron's Jay Z, and you can put Wade as like Dash, and Bron. I mean, who cares who Bosh is? Now, he doesn't apply in this analogy, but who cares? The point being is that, you know, it was like one day it's just like you look around and it's just like, wait, hold on. Why am I even placating or talking to Cameron and all in whoever all these people are you have around me? It's like that with LeBron. Like, he's got to be like, wait, hold on. Why is the conversation even about me taking less? What? I'm the best player in the world. Why am I taking? Why are we even having this conversation with me?
And the reason is because they're friends. This is the only reason LeBron even decides to sit down to have lunch with them.
I'm looking I'm looking at SportsCenter right now, and it has breaking news that says Haslam opts out of Heat contract.
Who?
Haslam.
That is important. Now
it is, but it's just like out of everybody we've been talking about.
Right.
Haslam is the next one.
But you know what, though? Yes. All right, no, hold on, Rob, right there. Stay with that, because that's a great nugget. Because ultimately, what you love about the genius of Pat Riley, he is a motivational speaker, and he'll get you to sacrifice. Haslam, you think Wade has no market? You know, Haslam has the same market I have as far as getting into the league.
Now, Haslam was scheduled to give you some more background. That Haslam was scheduled to make $4.6 million this year. So that, of course, is going to share some cash space. They probably bring him back for like a mil, say, you know what, Udonis?
Exactly.
You are officially a part of the Miami Mafia.
You will be a coach one day. You'll be an assistant.
You could be a scout. You could be a assistant. You'll be sitting on the bench for free, get season tickets. We'll take care of you. We will take care of you. You better opt out, though.
Yep.
That basically is Pat Riley being, I'll make you an offer you can't refuse. Now, if you don't opt out, you can play out that contract, but you will be barred.
You'll never dance in this league again.
It's so true.
And the rest, who else is on the league, the roster, if there is anybody else?
I'm about to say, poor Haslam. Haslam was probably sitting down at his locker, tying his shoes, minding his own business. And Pat Riley was like, come here.
You got a quick
minute. You're going to take less money.
That's what we make.
$4 million.
I think all those guys are free agents. I think the only one on the contract now, and they can only trade him, is Norris Cole. Chalmers is a free agent. Ray Allen has talked about coming back. He'll come back. I wouldn't worry about Ray Allen. If he comes back, he's going to come back for whatever, peanuts. Here's the thing about, and this is why Miami, other than stating the obvious, needs the cap space. If anybody, and I've been hearing, a lot of people say, people will come to play with LeBron. They'll come to play in Miami, take less veterans. Keep this in mind. Over the course of the last 4 years, the kind of players that they've been able to acquire. Ray Allen. Now, keep this in mind. Ray Allen, before he came to Miami, had made it work like close to $155 million. He had made his money. Rashard Lewis had made well over $100 million in his career. He had made his money. Chris Anderson was just happy to be in the league. Okay. Greg Ogden, Michael Beasley. So they're not, if you don't have cap space, you're not attracting a Gortat or a Kyle Lowry. Those guys haven't made serious money like that. They're going to take
– they'll get Vince Carter to the league at this point.
Vince Carter, dude that's on their last leg who have made money. But that's not even –
they're just trying to get a ring at this point,
They're trying to get a ring. Miami needs cap space to significantly upgrade the roster, which leads me into my next question.
Here's the thing. It's calling a spade a spade. All of those other little minor pieces work if that big three that is no longer big three is the foundation.
Right.
When you're looking at that roster, and you're LeBron James and you're Pat Riley and you're looking at everybody who's making $100 million and the other two people, for whatever reason, injury and, well, I believe just they've just beat Bosch's game down to death, are not carrying their weight, then making those minor little moves don't do anything anymore. So
yeah,
pieces, which is why I think Pat Riley, anyways, go ahead. We'll get into that.
No, but here's a couple scenarios that I want to give you as far as what possibly can happen. Let's say that for argument's sake, that Wade and Bosch do decide to take pay cuts. Okay, let's say they both get down to, let me think of a manageable number, a realistic pay cut. Let's say $14 million. Okay. Let's say they both decide to go there where they're at. Each $14 million is $28 million, 20 for LeBron, $48 million. Who knows? Maybe if they decide to take it, $48 million. So you have $15 million now to play with in the salary. Do you then, if you're Miami, do you then make a run for Melo, or do you go and get 2 to 3 very good pieces? That's the question.
Right. I think.
So what are you doing, Pat Riley?
Yeah, if I'm Pat Riley, because I am a snake. First, I want to say, hey, LeBron, Wade and Bosch took 14. Can you take 18? You know, just to be a little closer to them. That's the first thing I do. I try to get LeBron down just a little more from a PR standpoint. LeBron, you know, it's gonna look bad. The media's gonna kill you. You know, try to sell LeBron on that. But then, to answer your question, do you go for Melo, or do you go for good enough talent, you know, to really compete? I think the question becomes what two players, because more likely only be two, would benefit us more than just Melo. You know, you got your boy, you got the young boy in the draft as far as the point guard, so we need some big men. We need some size. So, could we get Pau Gasol? And I would love Pau to play with Bosch if they really, you know, playing inside-out game right there.
Right.
And I'm trying to think of another, you know, because at this point in his career, Wade has to come off the bench. That's the way I look at it, to really compete. You need a strong two or three.
Here's the thing, and you lead me to another question to add to that. If you're Pat Riley, okay, you see where Ginobili's at right now, okay?
Right.
Ginobili, 20 to 25 minutes, and doesn't have to play great for San Antonio to win. If I'm Pat Riley, I'm saying, look, if Wade is on the team, this is why I think you have to get Wade off the team, but if Wade is on the team, you have to create a foundation, a team that could sustain Wade not playing well and still be able to
exactly.
win.
Exactly. So that goes back to, so with that said, and also you got to look at the landscape. We're not talking about trades right now. We're talking about free agency. There's not a lot of talent out there. You know what I mean? We're not going for Stevenson. He's not likable with our organization. You know what I mean? So what the Aaron follows is a guy trade. Like, there's no really two or three that I could think of that someone else could think of.
I mean, you got a couple of names. You have, of course, Kyle Lowry. You have Isaiah Thomas from Sacramento. Gortat as a big man. Gasol is out there.
All of those
old
names.
Heads.
But that's the one I told you to answer my question. All of those names you gave me do not add up to Carmelo Anthony. And I'm not even saying this as a Knicks fan. I'm just saying Powell and Lowry, I love Lowry. You know what I mean? I really am a big fan of his. So that would be interesting. But Gortat, nah, I'll take Melo. I'll still take Melo over Gortat and somebody because I don't think those moves, the way y'all got beat by San Antonio, those cute moves, knowing that I can't depend on Wade is enough for me as LeBron because nobody else is going to be a number two scorer that you name. I don't know what Bosch is going to give me from game in and out. Like LeBron, what you talked about last time we spoke was just the physical wear and tear too. I need someone to take the pressure off of me. when I can't go, I need someone to say I'm the number one today. The only person I'm seeing raise his hand like, oh, please give me the chance is Melo. Now, you know what I mean, unless we can find a way to swing a Kevin Love and something, but he's going to need max money too. So none of these second-tier players that are going to take $10 to $8 million, I don't see that right combination of two. Maybe if you say we can find a way to do a sign-and-trade and get like a Rondo in the Pau-Gasol move, maybe, but I'm just not overly impressed. I really have to go back to what the main point is. F. Wade.
Yep.
$8 million, $12 million, $14 million. He can play for the veterans minimum, and we'll worry about him later.
So here's what
I'm
raising my hand because this is the gangster move that you have to pull. Pat Riley, you get with LeBron, and you say, we are going to lie to Dwayne Wade. We are going to boldface lie to him. We have to get him to opt out.
Opt out. Yes.
I don't care what we have to say. We have to get him to opt out. And as soon as he opts out, he's gone. He's got to go. He's got to go. Wade's
so,
got
so you
to go.
The way,
and you,
so you
bold,
the way,
I boldface lie. I don't care what lie. I have to tell him. I'll put your family to, I'll put your kids to, whatever. What promise him the world if he opts out. And then just turn your back on them. You got, I mean, this is business.
Yep.
We got to go cold-blooded on this. Because otherwise, if I'm LeBron, like, I seriously, like, the more that I'm listening, the more that we're talking about this, the more that I'm sitting, like, if I'm LeBron and Wade, you don't opt out, I got to go.
Yeah.
Yep.
I have to go. There's literally no way that this could, like, this plays out where you're here and this team gets better. There's no way. So if I'm LeBron and Riley, I lie and then I just, you know, then go back to that Jay-Z Rockefeller, I buy all the masters and cut everybody out. Cut them out of there. Deuces.
So what you
want to
do is tell Wade, you're Pat Riley. Bring Wade in the office. Like, look, we know you can opt in for 2 years around $42 million. We will give you 4 years, $60 million. So we'll give you $20 million total, and you'll have two more extra years.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes, you have to, because the irony here is
he
should, because he keeps his dignity. You know, it looks like, look, I'm getting paid more. It's like everyone knows what it is, but no one has to spell it out. And the funny thing that's going on, I wish SNL could do this skit, but it's like Bosh and Wade are right now texting LeBron for different reasons. You know, we all know that LeBron, well, perception-wise, LeBron and Wade are the closer of friends. So Wade is like, yo, we need to get Bosh to take more less money. It's like, you know, he needs to really opt out. And this is what he's trying to sell LeBron on. But Bosh is hitting him like, yo, you know Wade can't play no more. We need to get him to opt out. You know what I mean? Like, LeBron's looking at this from a business standpoint. He's agreeing with Bosh. Like, look, I know. Trust me, dude. I know. We just have to figure this out. And I think if Wade can't agree to a longer deal, you know, LeBron is going to be forced to, look, no harm, no foul. Because LeBron has always come across as this guy who loves his friends. Hard to separate business, and he doesn't like to have these difficult conversations.
Yeah,
it seems as though,
I do agree with. Yeah,
it seems as though if this becomes too complicated,
mm-hmm.
and he feels as though he's pushing Wade, he's going to respectfully say, "Listen, let's all just do what's the best in the best interest of all of our families."
Yeah.
So, no pressure. You stay here. I'm going to go on as well. It was fun. We did this thing 4 years, got to the 4 championships, you know what I mean? And no harm, no foul, because I just
No, that's a great point, because I think going back to that conversation, like the three of them, the conversation, all that, the publicity, everything, I think when it got down to it, what Wade was wanting to hear was like, oh, we're in this together, let's all figure it out, and LeBron, just as you said, because I 100% agree with that, not wanting to push the issue,
right.
Not wanting to, you know, face confrontation, but definitely not wanting to be like, oh, we're all in this at the exact same thing. Like, that's what has left, but I think that's where we get the reports from Chris Broussard, where Bosh and Wade walked out and they're just like, we're not sure where LeBron is right now.
Right. Oh, it all started with the Melo talk, where Bosh is like, we haven't discussed that. So LeBron has, like, he's the only, and we all have been in this situation without saying names, where he's the only one that has other friends. Like, this is their group. Like, they're cool with Melo, but him and Melo, he got their own little side conversations and inside jokes, and they're all sitting at the table like, yeah, funny, here's Melo again. They got a handshake or whatever. So LeBron has a lot of friends outside of this little bubble that they don't. Like, you haven't heard Kevin Love say, well, the boss does this. No one cares. No one cares. Everyone is talking about playing with LeBron, not a big three. There's not been one report about, oh, I would love to play with LeBron and Wade. And I would love to play with LeBron in Miami. And they're hearing the same reports we're hearing.
Go ahead.
And that's again. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
Do we have to move on? All right. Again, that's just, again, that Godfather move. Like, I'm just envisioning Pat Riley just being like, man, if I could just get rid of Wade and Bosh, I could get Love and Melo here.
Yeah,
I could just get rid of these two. They're right there. They're right there. They would come. I just need to get rid of these two.
Yeah,
or
the funny thing is about that.
If you could just get rid of Wade. I think Riley realizes that Bosh still has some left in the tank. If you just get rid of Wade, you can get Melo and maybe another
lie.
For real, to answer your original question about which deal sounds better, the thing is when you throw out, and we're just throwing out numbers. So if we say you said you couldn't see LeBron taking any less than 20. I agree with you if you're talking about playing with Wade and Bosh. Now, the playing field goes back to when they made their original deal. If you're talking about a Melo and a Love, maybe LeBron takes 15 and we all split the pie. And we still bring in Powell and someone else. So, like, the complexity changes so much. The dynamic changes so much depending on who am I sacrificing for. I'm not going to take any less to pay with Wade. No, you know, less than 20 for Wade. But, yes, you bring in Melo, maybe 16, maybe 18. So it's interesting.
Yeah, if Dave somehow by some miracle are able to have both of them opt out, Wade and Bosh, then I think that opens it up for anything's possible at that point.
And
anything.
I think that, just like you said, by some miracle, because we're talking about this from Riley and LeBron's perspective. Wade's not dumb. He's not an idiot.
Right. No.
He's a very smart person. He sees it. That's why he's hesitant to sign that opt out, because he sees it. He's like, they're trying to push me out. I brought this thing together, and now I'm the odd man out on this. And I can imagine, you know, just even setting aside physical skills, just like personal pride as a man and like as somebody who got this thing done, you know, with them, it's like, wait, hold on. Now it's all on me. Now I'm the one that's got to go. So I can see from his perspective, just in terms of just personal pride, I can see from his perspective on, you know, hey, I won't have a strong market out there. Can I get this money anywhere else? And I can also see him being super paranoid. Like, they will say X, Y, and Z, and then just as I'm suggesting, as soon as I find that opt out, they're going to turn their backs on me.
Yeah. So let's assume for a minute that it doesn't work out and LeBron does decide to move on. What then would be options?
Oof.
Now keep this in mind, the base teams are, of course, Chicago, Houston, Cleveland. Those are the base teams. A little less extent, the Lakers to a lesser extent. Those are the big. No, not the Knicks. You have no cap space. I'm talking about teams like this, who can either have cap space or can create cap space.
We got the cap space from LeBron. We do. Well, whatever. No, you don't.
But if LeBron decides to go on the market completely, and I mean completely, as far as not going back to Miami, you have teams, and this is the new NBA. You have teams that would be willing to trade away assets to create cap space. Like a Golden State. I mean, there are a number of you could throw the Clippers in here. It's crazy as it sounds. So it would be that number goes from 3 to 4 teams to about 10 to 12 teams easily.
And I think that's what makes this so interesting and fascinating, is because if he did for real choose to, like, I'm done with the Heat, then what LeBron's doing is he's calling the team he wants to go to and saying,
right,
I choose you, make it happen.
Now hold on. Now, before we all go too far off of this cliff, the caveat here is that you can't gut your team, because then he's not going to come.
No, absolutely.
Right.
So the balance is they have to find a way to still have a good enough team and the money to get him there.
So like a Houston, they've already done this, and this is why Daryl Morey is just so far ahead of the game from the standpoint of dealing with cap and how he got Howard, how he got Harden. They've already got rid of the Omar Asis contract. They're on their way to get Jeremy Lin's contract.
Jeremy Lin, greatest point guard ever.
they can offer LeBron around like 14 to 15 million a year to play with Dwight Howard and James Harden. Okay.
Right.
But that's a great three, and they can also still sign Chandler Parsons as well. Keep them as well. But you're playing in the Western Conference.
Hey.
Which is,
that's okay.
Minefield. If you're LeBron, that's a great, that could be a possible great option for the option, say, number one for LeBron. Or Chicago.
That's where I'm going. Now that you laid that out, I'm like, that's where I'm going.
Yeah,
Chicago.
I'll take Harden and Dwight play a little. Oh man,
yeah,
that was scary.
Go to Chicago.
Yeah, wow.
Chicago has option of Amnesty and Carlos Boozer creating space, and you put LeBron along there with Derrick Rose, Joakim Noah, still have Taj Gibson. And you're in the Eastern Conference.
I think you got to stop bringing up Derrick Rose. You have to stop, and I told you this before.
Yeah,
I have to talk about people that I know are playing. And no disrespect to him, and I hope he does come back strong and all of that. But if I'm a free agent, because, like, once again, I'm talking about, we said this at the top, LeBron is the most powerful athlete in NBA history. So it's like power doesn't gamble on what's the unknown. They don't take risks. They need to know certain things that's set in stone. So the Chicago thing is very intriguing with Derrick Rose, and I know I would love it. I mean, LeBron would easily be defensive player of the year, a league with pivotal defenses. But right now, that Houston, you telling me we keep Harden, Howard, Parsons?
That was scary.
No. I know it's in the West, but I feel very confident about our chances.
And this is another option as well, and it's out there, but I'll just toss it out there. I know what the Clippers are saying about Blake Griffin being untradeable, which is untradeable. You're telling me that, let's say at this point, now you might say to yourself, well, Miami will be reluctant to aid LeBron in terms of getting what he wants. I would have to find it hard to believe, if I'm Pat Riley, if I knew LeBron's not coming back, and I got a chance
to play, sign a trade if you can.
That's your sign, right? Yeah. Right. So you have LeBron for Blake Griffin straight up,
maybe some tossing some cash to even out the numbers, but they basically are making the same amount of money. So
right.
You can toss in, the Clippers can throw in a draft pick and Blake Griffin for LeBron. You have LeBron, Chris Paul, DeAndre Jordan, Crawford, Redick, those and those pieces that they have, you know, with the
deeper, they got Doc Rivers as a coach.
Doc Rivers as a coach. Chance to start off in a new ownership, you know, that situation. So those are kind of like the possibilities that LeBron has.
Well, here's the thing about the Clippers situation. I mean, I'm hearing reports that as good as friends of LeBron and Chris Paul are, they're worried about how they'll complement each other on the court with their personalities. You know, everyone knows Chris Paul's a very strong personality. So they're worried about that possible friction. Number two, LeBron was the first one to come out during the whole Sterling fiasco, and the Sterling fiasco isn't completely done.
It's not
so,
over. No.
Yeah, and we don't know when it really will be over. He's not until he dies, honestly. I don't think it's going to be over, over. Not saying I want the man to be dead right now, but it just doesn't seem like it's going to end. So, once again, that's intriguing, but, man, the way you set up that Houston thing,
You set up that Houston you set up that one perfectly. Woo. I hear you. I mean, like, I agree everything with the Chris Paul, the personality. Like, if I'm LeBron, I would be like, can Chris Paul get traded? Can I play? Can Griffin stay and I be here with Griffin? I don't necessarily know, like, if that's as enticing, even with the person, I mean, as well as the personality, because I absolutely do think, you know, Chris Paul gets annoying to people very quickly on the court. So I agree with all that, and I also think that situation, particularly without Blake Griffin, is not the most ideal. That Houston, man, if that can happen, but that's like a real possibility. Like, if that's a real possibility, that's the piece that intrigues me if I'm LeBron.
Yeah. Or keep this in mind as well. LeBron can opt back in and just become a free agent next year. So that's the problem.
He can do a one-year deal.
Yes, do a one-year deal.
Yeah, it would be opt-in. So, and the thing about that, and I always thought about these one-year deals, and now that I know that it can do it, I think, honestly, that may be a way to go depending on what Miami does. Because you see right now, no team was really prepared for, because the whole year you hear about Melo opting out. Everyone's hearing about Melo. Teams, like, you give them a week and everything, but they're really not ready. You know what I mean? Even on draft night, Golden State is still trying to find a way to get Kevin Love. It's like all these things teams are really trying to do. They're not prepared for me. You give me a year, hey, let me see what this Wiggins kid's really doing. Let me see this new coach in Cleveland. Is Derrick Rose going to play the whole season? You know, you get a whole year. And assuming now the only way I sign a one-year deal with Miami is if they're really good. You know what I mean? And we have a good team where we can compete for a championship. But if I have a year to sit up here and say, I stay in Miami one more year, I give everyone a chance, and I can play for a championship, and the whole time, I'm looking because now you didn't want to hear this, but now you got bigger players like the Knicks next year. You got other teams out there next year that got money. You know what I mean? And only a year left now for Kevin Durant, so will he be in trade talks next year? So it's a lot of interesting things if you just wait one more year, which Phil was trying to sell Melo on. And that's a different sell because the Knicks roster was horrible. So, you know, I understand exactly what Melo was doing. But I feel like LeBron, one-year deal wouldn't hurt him. It wouldn't hurt him at all. You know.
So,
but one-year deal versus
I think you're looking at either like I said, the one-year deal or the flat-out, or just flat-out go to Houston. Again, I don't know his family situation as far as would they want to live in Houston. Maybe they're always going to keep their house in Akron. That's like a $30 million house. So that's not going anywhere. So, but I don't know whether or not how much he would want to play in the Western Conference. So there's a lot of variables that could possibly deter that from his perspective. But that team would be,
Yeah, that in terms of best chance to win a championship, that is the team without question. I'm going to transition into possible other free agents and maybe major trades that could take place. And we talked about Kevin Love. Of course, the Kevin Love deal right now, you know, there were a lot of reports that Kevin Love deal is dead. I don't believe that to save my life that the Kevin Love deal is dead. The proposed deal would be Kevin Love to Golden State for Klay Thompson, Klay Thompson, David Lee, and a pick. Thoughts on that? Now the split between the organization is the owner wants Kevin Love, period.
Yeah.
Jerry West and Steve Kerr want to keep Klay Thompson. So that is the split that they're at.
Yeah. The thing about this one that's interesting, I mean, Kevin Love is a stat monster. We haven't really seen how he affects wins and losses. So with that said, to me, Kevin Love is David Lee and Klay Thompson. He's a combination of them. Like, his numbers aren't better than them combined. So it's kind of like it's sexier to say Love and Curry, but ultimately I don't see him having an impact bigger than those two combined. And out of the three of those guys in the triangle, Klay is the only one that plays defense. So I'm kind of on the Steve Kerr, Jerry West side. Look, I just got here as a coach. This team did pretty good without Kevin Love. I don't think that Kevin Love was the ingredient. You know, let me see what I could do. That's my whole thing. And to give a draft pick, I just think, like, whoa. We are really, like, I know we love this Kevin Love character, but I'm not completely sold on it. It reminds me of Darren Williams, where I told people about Darren Williams a long time ago. He's a great player, but he doesn't affect the wins that much. And they go, oh, yes, he does. I said, no, he did nothing with the Nets. They didn't have talent, okay, but when you're talking about the greatest, they got to find a way to win something. So I'm not saying he's a cancer like D. Williams, but I don't know. I'm good with David Lee and Thompson. I am. I don't know about you, Rob.
Yeah, I liked it when people were talking about David Lee and Harrison Barnes.
Yeah.
And surprisingly, they wanted Thompson. Yeah, Thompson would be the non-starter for me. I absolutely 100% agree with the logo on this one. Like, it's too much to give up on an athlete that we have not seen in any pressure situation at all ever in his life.
Does Golden State get the draft pick, you're saying?
No, just Golden State.
They don't give the draft pick.
Let me give you the complete deal. The complete deal is this. It's Kevin Love. It's Thompson, Lee, a draft pick for Kevin Love, Kelvin Martin, and J.J. Barea. That's the complete deal.
Oh, right. They did get Martin and Barea. And J.J. Barea. And they do have issues with the backup point guard. Okay, that's more intriguing.
Yeah, here's why I'd make the deal. I would make the deal from the standpoint of Klay Thompson, and I love Klay Thompson. Klay Thompson is coming up on a contract year after this year. This would be the last year of his contract. Golden State can't afford to give Klay Thompson a max contract. Klay Thompson's going to be looking for max money, considering how big, you know, considering this would be his first major contract. And I'm not talking about max money. I'm not talking about $100 million. I'm talking about the
8-10 5-year.
The $12 to $14 million a year, that mid-max money. Yeah. He will get that on the open market once he gets easily. If you look at the NBA right now, there are not too many top two guards.
Shooting guards. No, you're right.
Yeah.
So, and Klay Thompson will get that money from Minnesota if that trade does. Minnesota will play.
Right.
We will pay Klay Thompson without question.
Right.
So from Golden State standpoint, I'm not.
I'm looking at perspective. I'm not gonna pay Klay Thompson that, or I'm not gonna lose him for nothing. If I can get back Kevin Love, then I have to make that deal.
Yeah.
That's the
no, I agree. I come back now that you got Murray, because I know the Golden State actually recently talking with the Knicks. Knicks inside intel right now about trying to find a way to bring David Lee back. Initially, he was in this proposed deal with Tyson Chandler and Barnes that didn't go through. So, because David Lee still got a couple years on that big contract. So to be able to switch over his contract for Kevin Love, who everyone understands Kevin Love is more talented than David Lee, I would do it with Martin and Barea coming back. I would do it too. I agree. And like you said, you're not going to pick Thompson anyway, eventually. And I think, as much as I like Golden State and I like Thompson, Mark Jackson was there. I don't know what Steve Kerr is going to do, but I felt like there was no discipline when you got your starting backcourt shooting about 16 threes between them two. It's kind of like you love
right.
those guys together, Curry and Thompson, but ultimately somebody's going to have to go.
Yes.
So.
And you get a power forward. Listen.
Yeah, you brought me back. You brought me back.
You get a top power forward in the league, and you're great at two premium positions. You'd be great at point guard, and you'd be great at power forward in the Western Conference.
Right.
Hopefully, Bogut can stay somewhat healthy. You still have Harrison Barnes. You still have Draymond Green who played well.
I would see, honestly, if there's a way to get Iguodala.
Yeah.
Can we get Iguodala in this deal, Minnesota?
No, listen. This is where you got to bear with me. Stay with me here, because I'm about to. This is some of the crazy talk that I heard from good people. So stay with me. So you get Kevin Love, you have Steph Curry. Okay.
Uh-huh.
They're talking about having those two. And then trying to move Iguodala, trying to move Iguodala to create cap space to get LeBron James.
Right. Now, I did hear that that's why LeBron's waiting. But who?
Yes.
How that works? Because who takes Iguodala is
the
figure.
Well, here's the thing. You have more teams. Are willing to take on like these contracts in like Iguodala. Like you have a few teams that will be willing to take on Iguodala's contract. He does have three years left.
That's a lot of
years.
Why are there teams?
I don't know. Now, because that sounds like the Jeremy Lin deal that Houston has in place. So, okay, maybe they do have it in place. So the question becomes, because this is all hypothetical now, if LeBron has a chance to play with Curry and Love and
yes.
Steve Kerr, is that more enticing than that Houston deal? I still say, it is interesting.
That is close. It's very close.
I'm ultimately going to side with Houston.
I would lean towards Houston, yes, but think about it from this standpoint, though. If you're LeBron, James Harden, Harden is a guy who needs the ball. Curry is the pure point guard.
Right.
Harden's not selfish, but I'm saying, though, he is a guy who does need the basketball.
Let's go back to power. I'm not worried about anyone's needs. Okay, let's go back to what we're talking about, what fits me. LeBron wants to have fun, but he has to be in a culture where we're playing defense. Harden plays no defense, but Howard does. And all of these players, the only person that's playing defense besides LeBron is Howard, not Kevin Love, not Steph Curry. They'll be fun on offense to play with and shoot some threes and they'll be open. But no one in Golden State is playing defense if they get rid of Iguodala. No one. They have not one defense, maybe Barnes.
You still have Bogut as a rim protector.
Did you say you worried about being healthy? Right. So you got Bogut to play his defense when he's there, and Harrison Barnes. So you got rid of Thompson and Iguodala, your only defender. So once again, it's like, and you got an unknown in Steve Kerr. Like, I like it. I like it a lot. But still, I have to continue to go back because it's still got Beverly, who's a, you know, workhorse. He's annoying, but he plays defense. He's scrappy. You know what I mean? Parsons. I got shooters, you know what I mean, over in Houston. I got the young boy that was in the D-League last year. I got my own version of I got my new Damon Jones 2.0, you know what I mean? So I still got to lean to Houston.
I would think Swartz, it'd be very.
But like you said, I get you. That your bottom line is, with LeBron doing what he's doing, there's going to be a lot of teams to try to figure out how he fits into what they want to do, and that would definitely be intriguing to see just the talk of Curry and Love and LeBron playing together.
How about Melo as far as where he could possibly land? You, of course, have Chicago, Houston. To me, Chicago, Houston,
Dallas.
Chicago, Houston, Dallas. I'm not going to rank. I'm just going to throw out the teams. I'm not going to rank. I'll let you rank them. But Chicago, Houston, Dallas, the Lakers, he's going to meet with those teams next week or sometime in the next 10 days. He already says he wants to make a decision in the second week of July. So you have Chicago, Houston, Dallas, the Lakers as possible destinations for Carmelo.
Rob, you go on it first.
Okay, because I'll be quick. I just have a gut feeling he's going to stay with New York. I just have a gut feeling. I don't know. Like, again, Chicago, I'm not. Again, I can't even consider Chicago until I see Rose play a full season healthy and be remotely at the same level. So I can't even go to that space. Watching First Take, I really appreciated what Stephen A. Smith said about Melo and his enjoyment of his money and the amount of money he would be giving up to go somewhere else. It was somewhere, I think it was like, he called like $30 million. Like,
it is $30 million, yes. It's $30 million.
Yeah, like that, I think his family enjoys being in New York. He enjoys being in New York. I think Phil Jackson, I'm also just a huge believer in Phil Jackson and what he has planned for that franchise. But I think that the money thing is the big one. Stephen A. Smith's point was like, you know, like LeBron has all the extracurriculars, plus he's super frugal. He's like a businessman. Like, he is about, like, his money and everything and keeping that, like, tight. A lot of these players go out and they spend and enjoy their money in different ways. Melo, not that I know anything about his personal habits or anything, I just think $30 million for him is a lot to leave on the table. For a city he truly enjoys being. If it was a situation like with Dwight Howard where he's miserable, then that would be one thing. But that's a city he truly enjoys being. I think Phil Jackson will be able to sell him on, let's stick it out this year, next year, boom, this is the plan.
Right.
So my gut says he's going to stay with New York.
So this is my let me see. Well, what I think the best case scenario is, you know, Melo, if you're listening, you take what we propose for LeBron. I think this is a better deal for even you. You take a one-year deal. That's the best thing, I think, with New York. Because I think ultimately, and I know Stephen A. talked about money, but everything I'm hearing about Melo, he genuinely wants to win in New York. He really does.
Yeah.
He really wants to win in New York. He loves playing in New York. He loves everything about it. But he just wants to win. And the thing about Phil Jackson, everything in my gut is telling me, in his heart of hearts, he doesn't even want Melo there. I just don't believe it. I think, because if you listen to Phil Jackson, he gives the most backhanded compliments about Melo, this whole process. He says one thing, then he knocks it down. and even to continue to go back and forth in the media about putting the pressure on Melo taking less money. No, you're flipping the man's words. He didn't say he's taking less money for the sake of taking less money. He said it's that man bringing in more talent. So for Melo to take less money right now as the roster's constructed, even with the trade, that's stupid. That's not about loyalty. That's just being dumb. Like, why? If I'm taking less money, I'm going to the Chicago's or the Miami Heat or whatever to win. I'm not taking less money to lose again. So there's friction in their relationship that I don't understand. I just don't completely believe that they're on the same page as they're trying to make us believe. I think going back to LeBron to a certain case, because this is how it was the last time with free agents, everything centers around LeBron. Once he makes his move, everyone else makes their moves, you know. So hypothetically speaking, LeBron stays in Miami, Houston still got the same type of money, and they already said they were coming hard at Melo, you know.
Right.
So now we just slot Melo into that Houston deal with Dwight Howard. And you know, there's the rumors of this sign and trade thing going on with the Knicks and Harden possibly, you know. So, I my heart of hearts, this is tough. I don't know, man. I can't say that I see Melo staying with the Knicks. I just can't right now. I just can't. I don't know where he's going to go, but I ultimately don't see him staying with the Knicks. I see him ultimately pairing with someone, whether that's LeBron, Bosh, whoever the other big names is. I think LeBron, Melo's going to pair with another. I don't see him in New York. And I think even in the draft, and I don't know we're not talking about the draft yet, but the Knicks are prepared for Melo to move on. I think we are setting ourselves up.
Well, they have to. I mean, you have to. That's how you have to run your organization. You have to think.
Well,
not
this is all new. This is all new territory. You forget. This is new. Yes, in theory, you should prepare. But we are the New York Knicks. Normally, we don't prepare.
Yeah.
So don't say it like it's common sense.
No. So, I mean, listen, you got Phil Jackson, so it is common sense. So these are not the old Knicks. These are the new Knicks. The Phil Jackson era. It's the new Knicks. You got rid of Tyson Chandler. You moved, I mean, you got rid of Raymond Felton. So, you got, I mean, these, those are positive.
One quick caveat, real quick, about that Knicks trade. This is what I love the most about the trade. In all my years as a Knicks fan, this is probably the first time ever a trade is going down without any hoopla rumors leading up to it. It just happened. There was a rumor a day before, and that just showed me something like, wow, we made a move without every one of their mom knowing for 2 weeks what we were trying to do. It came out of left field completely, and I really applaud Phil Jackson for pulling that off. I really do. So I think he's confident enough in himself. Would he like Melo? Sure. We can fit Melo into what I want to do, a build here. But the way Phil is thinking, with or without Melo, we'll have money next year, and we'll figure this thing out, get it turned around. We're already turning it around. So that's where the Knicks are right now. We're moving forward.
Well,
but Mel, stay, please stay.
So again, I mean, like, just like you said, it literally all comes down to LeBron. It literally does.
Yes,
like, we joke about it being all about LeBron,
LeBron
is
that powerful. LeBron is that powerful. I mean, all these chips will drop once LeBron is signed. Another free agent note, or possible free agent note, a couple things. Number one, the Kyle Lowry to Miami thing that was reported to be imminent is, of course, a farce. Rick Bucher reported it. Then he went back and tweeted that, you know, basically he was hoodwinked, which is embarrassing for a guy as respected as Rick Bucher. Rick Bucher, I like Rick Bucher. He's been, you know, he was tremendous with ESPN all those years, and has been a great insider guy as far as getting that type of information. Just an example of, you know, getting it, trying to get it first instead of getting it right.
Mm-hmm.
Kyle Lowry for right now is not going to Miami. Also, a big free agent, a big piece I think that happened a couple of days ago
Zach Randolph re-signs with Memphis. And you say, okay, Zach Randolph, good, very obviously excellent player, 2 years, $20 million, option to his $16.5 million contract for next year. So really it's 3 years, $36.5 million. Why is that a big deal? Well, it's a big deal because, number one, Memphis will be a contender next year. I thought for sure that Randolph would opt out. And in this market, which is not a strong market, once you get past LeBron, Melo, and possibly Bosh, Zach Randolph on open market could have easily got a max contract or close to a mid-max contract easily as a big man. So he stays, takes a discount for 2 years, $20 million after next year, that contract will kick in, which will allow Memphis to possibly re-sign Marc Gasol for next year. Remember, Marc Gasol is going to be a free agent in 2015 and certainly would have been one of the most, decorated free agent, would have been the most decorated free agent big man of next year, or center at least. You have Aldridge as well. So that is a big piece. So maybe Memphis is able to sign him, keep him, and maybe he's off the market for next year. Also, LaMarcus Aldridge, who's supposed to be a free agent next year, they are reportedly working on an extension for him for Portland that would go in the range of 5 years, $108 million. So if you're LaMarcus Aldridge, do you sign the $108 million extension or do you become an outright free agent? That's
right.
Hard to walk away from $108 million. I think if that's on the table, I think Aldridge, even though he would be a viable free agent for next year, I think Aldridge will probably stay with Portland because that's a team that's on the upswing. Not like the Knicks, not like the Lakers, they're on their way up. So
right.
I think Marcus Aldridge will sign that 5-year, $108 million extension.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think when we talk about money and the fact that we're just now getting into the playoffs and I got a young and up-and-coming in Lillard and a good nucleus over there, I don't see him not signing that either. I just don't. He doesn't even come across as far as, like, just wanting to do the whole free agency tour just to do it. I think he's going to be more of like a Kevin Durant, sign the extension and move on.
Yeah.
So you have a couple of teams in terms of free agency, always the big thing is cap space. Here are some of the teams that have the most cap space. Phoenix, amazingly, despite being a playoff team, and they were a playoff team, they didn't make the playoffs, but they were a playoff team.
Right,
in terms of their record, they're going to have $35 million of cap space. They've already made qualifying offers to Eric Bledsoe and also PJ Tucker, who are restricted free agents. So they've made qualifying offers to those two. We'll see if another team blows away Eric Bledsoe to get him. Philly has $30 million of the cap space. Utah has $30 million of cap space. Orlando has 28. Dallas has 26. Charlotte has 23. Very interesting playoff team last year. Detroit has 23. Greg Monroe is a restricted free agent. Will they go after him? The Lakers has 22. Atlanta 15 and Cleveland 13. So there are some possible movers and shakers with those particular teams. Do we see any one of those teams going crazy as far as the cap space goes?
The Lakers?
Yeah.
You only named about three teams on that whole list that each real player would want to play for. So,
I was going to say it. Each one of those teams has that much cap room for a reason.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. Yes, they do have a lot of money.
Yeah, you will
should.
See. This is what you call the Lance Stevenson tour.
Yep.
You'll have a lot
perfect.
Of suitors.
So true.
With those teams you named, Lance Stevenson has a huge market.
Yep.
But the LeBrons, the only way the Lakers go crazy, they go crazy over the Bosh, LeBrons, and Melo. Outside of that, no one's playing in Cleveland or who else? Sixers, Philly, not even Phoenix, honestly. Like, no one's playing in those markets. They're just not going to do it. And they know that. And And eventually, you know, and Phoenix, well, their best bet is just to keep Bledsoe, honestly. You know what I mean? So that number
comes
down.
Yeah, they've made qualifying offers.
Right, yeah, you're right. I don't know why they made a qualifying offer to P.J. Tucker. That's funny. unless the qualifying offer was $500,000, I don't know what.
P.J. Tucker played well last year.
He did play well. Listen, but once again, we're talking about this is why the great franchises are great. I'm not making P.J. Tucker a qualifying offer with Melo and LeBron. I got to at least humor them. I'm going to make Bledsoe offer. P.J. Tucker, and you know who you are, P.J. Tucker. We'll get back to you once I figure out what the big boys are playing and doing first.
Right,
P.J. Tucker gives no offer.
No, but get
no
back
offer.
To your point, though. Does Phoenix realistically think they can get Carmelo and LeBron? So that's probably why they.
Well, okay, exactly. Well, then we go back to the thing. So then, this is why the PJ Tuckers do get qualifying offers because we don't waste our time. Okay. Let's just keep our team together, and whoever else is out there, maybe. Right, I'm with you. The only way those teams get over, honestly. Is if you get players under contract that don't have a no-trade clause, meaning they have to come. We have the money and the space. They have no choice but to come. We enslave them. That's the only way players go to those teams.
The Lakers have $22 million in cap space. It could go up to possibly 30 if they're able to use a stretch provision on Steve Nash's contract. More than likely, it's not going to happen. Yeah.
Well,
hold on
for a second. Because there is always another option. The Lakers could re-sign Kobe to another extension for $22 million. They just get that out of the way right now.
Let's not forget that.
For the record, last year when we had this conversation, there was one person that was saying amnesty Kobe.
I said amnesty Steve Nash, and you still are the one person that believes that crap. I was saying amnesty Steve Nash always. That's what I was at.
Sure.
You're very
nice, Steve Nash. that was not the argument.
Yeah.
No.
But every analyst I hear, as soon as they talk about the league, they're just like that. Kobe's contract. They just can't do blah 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 because of Kobe's crazy contract.
Yes. No.
That's
what
I'm saying. They did it.
They froze themselves.
Yeah.
They didn't have to.
No, that's why I said they could just give him the $22 million more. Here. Take it.
So
you don't want it.
They'll make a faint chance at Carmelo Anthony. Bosch would be more realistic if he were to opt out.
All right.
Of his deal. So I think Bosch is more of a realistic. Or they might just wait. More than likely, they'll probably just wait until 2015 when you have possibly could have Gasol, Aldridge, if he doesn't sign an extension, Kyrie Irving, Rondo, guys like that. This is why people, you have to draft well. You have to draft and can't sign bad contracts. So draft well, don't sign bad contracts. In terms of the draft, of course, one of the most anticipated drafts of all time, or in recent memory, last 10 years at least, took place Thursday. Number one pick, Cleveland gets Wiggins. That was a question mark. And Joel Embiid, the guy who was the number one rated prospect, of course, had the foot injury, goes to the Sixers. First of all, what did we feel about Cleveland and just how they handled the draft? Not only forget about just the pick, but just everything that led up to them picking Wiggins. What were your thoughts on that?
Floor is yours.
The first clause was typical Cleveland nonsense. You know what I mean? Like, they don't know who they're picking. The time expires of the draft. They still haven't said what they're doing. And you see that you don't really know who's running Cleveland's organization, which is why they always have the number one draft pick. They just suck. And some teams have a black cloud around them. Other teams is self-inflicted. So, like, I don't think this whole Cleveland curse is not, it's not a curse. It's self-inflicted, man. It's the people running these organizations. Some are just, you do this to yourself. It's like Charlie Brown in the football. Stop trying to kick me. Stop trying to kick me. You know what Lucy's going to do. You know what I mean? And, like, I wish the NBA just please. Look, you had the Shaq rules, the Jordan rules. They had the Cleveland rules. The Cleveland rules is there's no way possible we get in the number one draft pick. I don't care what, how many balls they get, how many games they lose. We cannot afford, for the sake of the league and the players coming into the league, to give them the number one pick. I've never seen this kind of nonsense happen with the number one pick. It was just a really simple thing. Now, ultimately, with all that said, they did get it right. They did pick the player that I felt fit their system and talent the most in Wiggins. And it has, a really huge upside. So I applaud them for finally getting up to the board and picking the right player.
Go ahead, Zach.
Yeah, just as a side, because I 100% agree with everything that Chad said. When I was looking at that Bill Simmons, his look back on, like, all the drafts, and
right.
You see that, like, that three or four year period that Oklahoma City had, what's in dice? They were just rolling sevens. Like, it was just like, what? How could you possibly be this high as a franchise? And conversely, we go to Cleveland, who it just every time I know it intellectually that they had the number one pick 3 out of 4 years, but even when I say it or when somebody else says it, it sounds amazing to me. And the fact that has happened, you should be penalized. You should be penalized. It should not be, that should not be able to happen. It just shouldn't be able to happen. So, yes, absolutely, Wiggins, perfect fit for them at this time. We'll see how they develop him. You know, that's a whole another story that will unfold, but it was the right pick for them at that time. But man,
yeah,
three out of four years, number one pick. I can't.
You should be paralyzed. Two. It should be two penalties. Number one, you should not allow to. Obviously, the obvious one, not allowed to have a number one, the number one pick. And number two, you should be paralyzed a second round draft pick. That makes no sense.
You're just kicked out of the draft.
So, the Wiggins pick was a perfect pick to me. I love Wiggins' game. I watched him a lot in college because I was also watching NBA and that whole Kansas freshman class and just all these freshmen in general this year. And I thought Wiggins – I thought Embiid had the best upside considering his size, but I thought Wiggins as a wing player was second. In today's league, if you can't get a Tim Duncan draft or a Akeem Olajuwon or that dominant big man, and there haven't been too many of them, as we all know, the next closest thing and the next closest value, most valuable thing is that wing player who can play and defend multiple positions. So Wiggins, 6'8", 215, 220, can guard two guards, threes, and maybe some slower point guards who have size. So that type of guy is invaluable. You look at the Kawhi Leonards, the Paul Georges, those particular just looking at how many quality small forwards there are in the league today. That type of guy is invaluable. He's a guy who's on the team. Still, everybody talks about him not being an offensive alpha male. He averaged 17 points on a team, to me, that didn't really run plays for him in college.
Yeah.
He didn't run plays for him. He played with other players who were gunners. You know what I'm saying? You know, not Embiid, but just no real point guard at Kansas. I think he has superstar potential. And it's just going to be a matter of how well, again, the scary thing is how, Cleveland with the coaching
the organization, how well he's developed, I mean, they're gonna obviously have to bring in some veteran players, but just his upside and the skill set that he has right now was more than worthy of him being that number one pick, as far as I'm concerned. At number two, of course, you had Jabari Parker go to Milwaukee. There was talks that Parker tanked the Cleveland workout to go to Milwaukee, which I don't believe. I find it hard that, I don't think that a player is going to tank a workout. Maybe he did. I don't know. Cleveland is that bad. But anyway, he goes to Milwaukee, a Duke guy, so I'll let the Dukies have their moment.
Duke.
What do we Now, there are some talks of his weight being an issue. He's 255 now. He's heavy. What are your thoughts on that?
I love it. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, no, it's Milwaukee. You know, he's gonna be a ready-made pro. You know, the way all that stuff, whatever, that'll work itself out. He'll be
right.
A ready-made pro. He'll shine there. It's just, how soon he can get out of Milwaukee. It's just the countdown to when he got out. Just like, poor Milwaukee. Yep. At the time when he's getting to his peak, he'll be gone. So Milwaukee be a nice development territory for him to just shoot and not feel pressure, just all. It's a perfect scenario for him.
I mean, as Rob's talking, I'm thinking, now they have these mandatory camps for players coming into the league just on financing and budgeting their money and everything. I think that's great for the NBA to institute that. But I think the next step is from a mental standpoint. For those players coming from winning organizations and pedigrees, then you have, the first thing I thought about Parker, be prepared to lose a lot.
Yeah.
He was so happy not to go to Cleveland and to go to Milwaukee and to be in the Midwest still and all of that. But look, man, be ready to lose.
Yep.
Be ready to lose. And like you said, because the thing is, the weight stuff wasn't an issue, but is he an emotional eater? I don't know. I don't know. I like Parker. I like him a lot. But I don't know what else is there to do in Milwaukee besides have a beard, and lose.
Oh, and the bratwurst. That's close to Green Bay. The bratwurst. So I would be concerned from hopefully he doesn't get depressed and start eating bratwurst, drinking beer, eating bratwurst.
He'll be fine.
He'll lose. But I think that he has a strong foundation. I'm not going to go on my whole two-parent home stuff again, but he has a strong foundation, and I think he's equipped to help their franchise. I just think that no one really knows what Milwaukee's doing. They don't really have a point guard. They already talked about they need a two-guard, and O.J. Bale's like, damn, I'm here. So I don't know what Milwaukee's doing. But they did pick the right player. Once again, and I'll say this too, and I texted Cyril about this the night of the draft, the way the lottery was at least, it was smart. It was one of the first times I've seen in a long time with the NBA draft where teams were taking who they needed, not just the best fit. I mean, not just the best name or best talent or board. Teams are really taking who they needed.
Yeah.
So I was impressed by that.
Yeah, Parker.
And you even
Parker
felt it, too, because, the announcers were, struggling to come up with complaints. It was his ceiling isn't as high as the other guy's ceiling, but he's solid. And, it was definitely, as you watch the draft, yep, that makes sense. That pick makes sense.
Right.
Yeah, it was a professionally run draft.
So you have Parker. I think Parker is one of the candidates. Will be, I would say, the leading candidate for rookie of the year. I think he'll put up excellent numbers, 17 to 20 points this year on that team. Start right away, of course. And I think he'll be fine there for the, you know, get an NBA trainer, nutritionist, trim down, and eventually I think he'll be a four. I don't think he's athletic enough to guard threes. So I think his position, if people don't know what his position will be, he's going to be a power forward who will be able to shoot from the outside. So I think that's eventually what his position will be. The next pick, of course, was the wild card of the draft, the most controversial of all the picks, Joel Embiid to the Sixers. What are your thoughts?
Rob, you got this.
I mean, no, I just had like a bunch of jokes in my head. Like, that was just my initial thought. I just had a ton of jokes in my head. And it's like, it's not even like Embiid was like super controversial in terms of like people knew he was going to dip a little bit, but also team that got him outside of the, you know, because most people are projected to go number one. Outside of number one, we're going to feel lucky to get him at that point in time. And so it wasn't necessarily like crazy controversial. It's just who picked him that made it hilarious. And it's just like, it's like what, like, I like, not only are the Sixers not averse to taking injured players, they love it. It's just like their thing now. It's like, if you're a center who can't play for months, you're our guy. Like that is part of our. And it's just like, how is this working out for you? I'm just fascinated to know, like, what is the thought process in there? It's almost like Kevin, right, the general manager Kevin Kahn. Right, was that Minnesota when he just kept taking point guards? Or ooh, Matt Millen, even better. Matt Millen, we just kept drafting wide receivers. Just keep drafting wide receivers. So I guess it's just like you just keep drafting centers who are injured, and one is bound to be good. So, you know, they cracked out on Bynum. Nerlens Noel, so it's either coin flip. I guess one of them's got to be good, right? He's a coin flip on them. But that's what I mean. The other one's going to be horrible. But my last point to this for the Sixers, because like literally, they're literally a D League team. They're literally a D League team, which is not cool. It's just not cool, and I don't know how. I mean, if you're a Philadelphia fan, I guess you just drink a lot. Like that's literally all you can do, because it's a D League product on the floor. But my last point is, when and where on the Sixers scouting report does it say big men with lower issues, feet, knees, have worked out so well in NFL history? Like, that equals success. I just want to see that board that just goes, yeah, Bill Walton, that played out really good. Ilgauskas, man, that was great. You know, like, just like those, like, and those are like the top tier end of big men who've had problems. Let's get them right on draft. Let's get them right on draft day. Like, let's get the problems right there, and maybe it'll work out. I just don't get it. Anyway.
So this is what it is. Like, when you talk about risk and gambles, the teams that can do that are the winning franchises. You know, San Antonio could have stashed them. This is like the thing is, and I'll make this an analogy real quick. My pastor, this is a while back, was in church, and he had this whole seminar on marriages and everything. And him and his wife, just to, you know, his backstory, married over 20-something years. So he was talking about certain things that worked in his home. Then a lot of these young dudes went out there and got cursed out by their wives because they were trying to do the same thing at their home. But he forgot to tell them, like, oh, but you're not me. I earned the right to do certain things that I did. And what happens is you have these lower-tier franchises doing Lakers type-ish and Spurs type-ish. You don't just draft foreign players because it's cute and sexy and trendy. You got to know what you're doing when you're drafting foreign players. San Antonio, they don't just do it because, oh, he's from Argentina. No. There's a method to this madness that these dumb teams don't know. When your average age is about 24, you don't draft players that aren't playing at all next year. That's like 101. You're not playing when? Oh, you may be Olajuwon, but you won't be Olajuwon here. And it's like, it was one thing. Now, I know the back and the foot aren't related, but if the concern is the guy's back where he can't even finish his college career, like this dude's had a lot of college games. Let's not forget that. Okay, so we're talking about the back. You're like, you know what? I don't know, man. I can't pass up. Like, all right, let's go with him. Oh, a foot injury? Yeah, they're unrelated, but sometimes God is throwing a rock at your head. Like, hey, don't do it. Not you. The best bet for the Sixers, which is everyone still loves this guy, I am fielding trade offers and bringing in some veteran talent. Because it just, like to Rob's point, the Bynums, the Noels, like, what are you doing? What are you doing? And I have to go back earlier. The Sixers didn't even tank. I had a fortunate luxury of going to a Knicks Sixers game last year. And I'm watching the game, and I said, they lost 26 games in a row, whatever, because they suck. It's not that they even try to, like, who is on their roster?
They really suck.
A D-League team. They really had a D-League team, man. And what you're doing is you're crippling the franchise because you're killing the player spirit. Fans, that word is way too loose when you talk about the Sixers. No one wants to play in Philadelphia. It's just a situation that you're just like, whatever. It's like a girl who says, I know no one likes me, so I'm going to keep eating anyway. Now I'll be fatter and uglier. No one cares. That's what the Sixers are. They're like, whatever, let's just suck. We'll be the worst team then. That's what we'll do. We'll be the worst team ever. So I get it. I ride with them on a strategy. Let's sit out here, get the popcorn, and see how close we can get to losing 82 games. This will be very intriguing to see how much worse we can be this year as opposed to what we were last year. I can't wait to see what they do. They'll easily lose 20 games twice next season.
Quick update. Brazil and Chile are in, like, the second or third overtime. This is insane. They're still playing. It's 1-1 at that. So this – don't let Brazil lose. It'll be a riot in Brazil. Brazil losing their whole country. So that's going on. I like the pick. I'm going to take the complete – just about almost a complete opposite take of my two esteemed colleagues. I like the pick, and I'll say a couple of – this is the reason why I like the pick. Number one, Sam Hinkie, who is the Sixer personnel guy, GM, in charge of making these moves, is from Houston. He was the executive president under Daryl Morey. So he's coming from that tree of analytics, drafting, things of that nature. He just took over this job last year. Last year was his first year. So he inherited, you know, a disaster, say the least. So I've always had the theory in the NBA that there's no in-between. You either – oh, now they're doing penalty kicks now. Wow. You either suck to no end or you're a championship or contending for a championship. Clearly, they've taken – the former in terms of that. So I looked at the draft. I said, there's no way you can take Embiid at one and pass up on a Wiggins or Parker. No way. So, but they, of course, didn't have to make that decision. So I say, I understand the injuries with Embiid, 19 years old with the back. Now the back got healed. He hurt his foot. The back was healed. Then he had this unbelievable workout with Cleveland. Cleveland would have taken him number one if not for the foot. So he hurts his foot. He's probably going to be out 5 to 8 months. I might not even play him for this season, to be honest with you. Okay. But again, you're the Sixers. You're going to, you know, you've sucked for a couple of years. What's going to be sucking for one or two more years? I understand the plan in terms of where they're going. They're collecting assets. Noel will be back this year.
You have Michael Carter Williams, who I think is going to be, who I think people are shortchanging, who said, you know, in terms of the kind of player he's going to be. He did average 16, 6, 5, and 5, and 5. I know the team was terrible, but he did, like, he played well. He had a very good year. It's just it was the culture of losing that made it look like he didn't, they made it seem like he didn't play as well as he played. So they have talented young pieces. So the question for me is, if I'm running the Sixers and I'm saying I'm Hinkie, okay, we have all these pieces, we have $30 million in cap space. So here's what you have to do if you're the Sixers. You can't use your Sixers. This offseason, I'm going after one or two veteran players who I may have to overpay for to not only help me win a couple more games. They're not going to help me contend. What they're going to do is help build a culture of professionalism. So I'm going after Gortat. If I have to overpay to get him, I'll overpay to get him to help my big man, the young big man I have. So they can pay a Gortat. They can go at even like a Vince Carter, Sean Marion. I'm bringing in guys who are professionals to help out my younger players to where they can develop.
Please stop.
Go,
please stop.
Go.
Please. I can't listen to any more of this. I can't. Because I was okay. I was okay with the Gortat. As soon as you started talking about the Vince Carter that you're going to bring in, the Jason Richardson, they all the same player. They're all the same player. They do nothing for those teams. When you're talking about, because Noel's going to play this year,
Marion's
we don't even know.
Sean Marion's won a championship, though.
Right. You know what a championship means to a bunch of 20-year-olds, and you're talking about Sean Marion? Nothing. I think the element that you keep forgetting, that everyone forgets when you have this much young talent, is the same thing I'm worried about with Indiana's young talent. They have egos. You have, within 2 years, about five or six rookies. They all want their piece of the pie. We don't know what Noel's going to bring. The NBA, we all know, honestly, is not a development league, meaning where you are is where you are. You better work on your game yourself, okay? And the luxury is you get better when you're with those San Antonio type franchises where we don't need you right now. There's no pressure for you to come in, and you can grow mature under real veterans. I don't want Vince Carter to be the mentor of my 24-year-old group. Just don't. The Sixers, historically, no one comes to the Sixers.
Why not? Why wouldn't you want a Vince Carter? Why not?
Because we don't know him personally, but I don't think he's necessarily the strongest character person. You know, he's not going to coach me on not giving up and tanking.
Well, hold on.
Really quickly, because I think we might be missing a little bit of a point here. The point being that
there's
an acceptable amount of on any given team, right? They say in football, you know, you won't want more than three knuckleheads in your locker room, right? They're like at a certain point. Now, if you had an even mix of veterans and young people, that's one thing. But to bring in Gortat and Vince Carter to a locker room full of 19, 20, 21-year-olds, that's the head coach. Like, at that certain point, that's the head coach's job to mentor the whole team. One veteran, two veterans can't contain a locker room full of don't know nothing about nothings and can't tell me about nothing. We've all been 18 and 19. Couldn't nobody tell us anything?
You get
a group of them all together, it's just going to be hard. And I think like that, there's a difference between attaining assets and just attaining young talent.
Here's the thing. I'm bringing in a Gortat to help work with my. I try to bring in a veteran big man to help work with Embiid and with a Noel. Especially with Embiid once he's healthy. So I'm bringing that veteran big man. I like
Gortat would play with you.
Did Olajuwon work with Dwight Howard? How'd that work out?
What do you mean? You're talking about in terms of how that worked out this year? I mean, it's not, but that wasn't the right fit in terms of their style of play. Dwight Howard is not the
Alonzo is a two-time champion.
Stop. It didn't work out not because Dwight Howard didn't listen to Olajuwon. It didn't work out because they are two totally different style of players. Olajuwon can't teach Dwight Howard how to with the moves. Dwight Howard is more of a back to the basket player. So he needed to work with more of a back-to-basket type mentor. Dwight Howard doesn't have that kind of footwork where he can shake people, dribble. That's not. It wasn't a good mix in terms of that mentoring. So that wasn't going to work out regardless. Like Dwight Howard, a lot of times worked out with guards and perimeter players. Again, can't teach Dwight Howard in terms of they're totally different styles of players.
This is the problem, though. Even with your Gortat thing. And it's a possibility if Gortat would want to come to a loser, because you already know that this team is going to tank 2 years in a row. So that's not attractive to anybody. This is my point, though, when I'm talking about winning a loser franchise. Loser franchises have to go off a whole bunch of what-if possibilities. You first of all have to secure good mentoring personalities and then hope that these young boys – listen to these personalities, this whole group of 24. You may have Embiid listen to Gortat, but what Noel is like, what? I'm not trying to hear that. He's nothing but a decent player. Like, there's too many risks to Rob's point when you have so many young players that are not developed, and you're just sitting up here and saying, I get the logic, bring in the best talent. No, the logic is, let's see if we can trade right now for Gortat and give them the pick. You know, because these, all you're doing is racking up young talent like the Sacramento Kings, and you're not going anywhere. We agree.
We agree from the standpoint that they're going to have to, with these assets that they've collected, they're going to have to move a couple of these assets. Now, I'm not saying Noel and B, but these other players, they're going to have to move them for some more veteran talent. So I'm with you from that standpoint. You can't have 10 25-year-olds on the same team and expect to do anything and be in the lottery year after year after year. So that's what I'm saying. That with that cap space, but the only way you can't draft those guys with the cap space. Let's say they wouldn't have chose Embiid and they would have went with an Exum or a Marcus Smart. It still would have been a young player. It still would have been a 21, 22-year-old player, regardless. So
I thought they should have traded the pick. Period. Honestly,
what happens.
I mean, to keep it real simple for you, we just talked about how crazy Cleveland is. If crazy Cleveland passes on the beat, I'm like, wow, why are they going to act like they got common sense? I'm staying away from him, too. We'll trade. If even they can get it right.
I'm not dictating anything based on what Cleveland is. Like, why
no,
would you dictate
no, no.
No, no, absolutely not. I'm not.
Surreal, we're both educators, right? Like, if, like, let's say there's, like, a ton of bad teachers, just bringing in two good teachers is not going to change that culture.
When
you have created a culture of losing and your only solution is to bring in more younger players who don't have any idea how to win on the NBA level, that is not going to redefine that culture. I like what Chad said about Embiid. I don't say you don't draft him, but since he's such a hot property, draft him and then trade him for some more assets, for some older assets, not older assets, some more experienced assets, something like that, like shake it up a little bit.
I just think Philadelphia is in a snake pit of losing.
We're trying to solve something that can't be solved.
I would have made the pick to get Embiid, but I do think they're going to have to move a couple of their assets for veteran players. Like, and this summer is going to begin with it. So I'm with you from that standpoint, but I still would have made the pick myself. So. Things before we head out, couple of teams that I thought did pretty well with their drafts real quickly. I thought Boston was smart. James Young had a nice draft. Charlotte with Vonleh, P.J. Harrison. Orlando with the point guard for Reed, Elfrid Payton and Aaron Gordon, more importantly, did well. My Lakers had to, you know, Julius Randle, thought he was going to mess it up, but I thought that was a solid, very good pick at that, since he had number seven. A lot of people thought
the Knicks.
I like it early.
Yeah.
Yes. That was a steal, because I think that guy is first round top.
Yep.
So, couple teams had very good drafts. I don't understand Oklahoma City not picking a shooter when they had the chance to get like Rodney Hood and another shooter. They did take, and again, I like McGarry as a big man, as a quality. He's a quality big man. Did have a bit of a weed problem in college, but you know that goes. That's half the league, unfortunately. But I think I'd be very interested to watch Oklahoma City in terms of what they do. We don't have enough time to discuss it, but in terms of what they do moving along in the future as far as this summer, I mean, in particular in terms of adding veterans and depth to their roster. But overall, strong draft, very balanced draft. There will be some second-round picks who have first-round talent who will surprise people. That's how strong I think this draft was overall. What are your thoughts on the old draft overall?
Yeah, I agree. I think that, you know, the 30-year anniversary of the best draft ever, like, you got to put it in context. You're not going to get ever again a Jordan, Olajuwon, a Barkley, a Stockton in the draft. But I think looking at this draft in its entirety, this is more about the quantity. Like, I think just in the first round, and now this is just an estimate, but I'm looking at 10 to 15 players that at least going to be in one all-star game. I just think that. You know what I mean? I think that there's a lot of talent, and I think going back to me saying it was a smart draft, I think a lot of these players are set up to succeed, you know, with the organizations that they got, you know, to be a part of on Thursday night. Now, Embiid, and you know, last thing I'll say about him is just that as great of a talent as he is, you worry when they go to these type of franchises, because we're talking about not just the talents you have, but developing that talent. You know, Michael Carter didn't know he was getting traded that, you know, draft night, and he's their rookie of the year. So it's like, I worry about those teams that get all these young players and they just gobble them up, but they can't really develop them. You know, so I wish, you know, that he has a healthy and long career, but you would love to see him go to, you know, Houston, the Spurs, or, you know, OKC, what can y'all throw together? You know, those type of teams. Now, of course, everybody wants to go to those teams, but it's just like I'm really going to be interested to see how even Cleveland or Wiggins. I think Wiggins, like you said, has a chance to be a superstar. Could he be a superstar in Cleveland? I don't know. I don't know how they develop talent over there.
I mean, the question is, in terms of the Sixers with Embiid and even Noel from last year. Again, Embiid might not play this year, so we might not see.
They already said he's not playing.
He's probably not going to play this year. There's going to be a huge year for Noel and Michael Carter-Williams the second year. So, to me, if those two guys develop and head in the right direction, even if they lose a bunch of games, that will tell me that the organization possibly completely knows what they're doing.
That's fair.
So I think that's a fair. I think watching the development of those two particular players will be key to their future, regardless of how many games they lose. If those players,
they got new leadership, but Thaddeus Young is who Thaddeus Young was 5 years ago. So there's nothing about what the Sixers are doing showing me that players are getting better over there.
Again, under this regime, though, again, this dude just took over last year.
Yeah, right? We'll see.
I think you have to give him some. I think you have to give him some time from that standpoint. But I would move. You bring up Thaddeus Young. I would have to move Thaddeus Young for a veteran player. You can get a veteran player for Thaddeus Young at this point. His contract, he's making $9 million a year, still a young, talented player. They should move him, not for a draft pick, but for a veteran player. Absolutely.
Well, once again, and you know, we'll leave on this one, but we have to define what we mean by veteran. When you're talking about young player, you're talking about a veteran that they'll listen to. There are a lot of veterans in the league.
Respect.
You can get a Rashard Lewis. Is anyone going to listen to Rashard Lewis?
No.
No.
So it's like there's only a handful of veterans that these young boys are going to listen to. Can you give that one? And that's the key. You know, Danny Young is a veteran compared to his teammates.
Yeah,
he's
exactly.
A veteran.
He should be retired compared to some of the, how young they are. But I think Noel, Embiid, Michael Carter. Here's the thing about them too. Unlike somewhat with Cleveland, Kyrie Irving and Deion Waiters are knuckleheads. We know they're knuckleheads. Clearly, I haven't gotten the sense yet that Michael Carter Williams, Embiid, or Noel are knuckleheads. I haven't gotten that sense yet. So that's the thing that they have somewhat right now going for them, that they don't have knuckleheads on that team versus Cleveland.
Hold on, but this is what you forget. I said this last year. Some knuckleheads are born like that. Others are created. And it's like people follow their parents. If we tank last year, you're telling me we're going to tank again. This shows me what you think about our organization. Why am I practicing this hard? Why? There's no reason you can tell me I'm practicing this hard when you're telling me you want to lose again. So, like, you got to be careful with these young boys when you're saying we're going to tank for 164 straight games.
Ooh.
But you still want me to bust my butt. That's not common sense to assume that for anyone. Not just me. Oh, I mean, all y'all playing hard. All y'all playing hard, 164 games and 164 practices. Well, it's a lot more practice than that. No,
right.
You're going to lose without
that's
doing anything.
The most depressing thing for me when I saw the Sixers has nothing to do with the draft, nothing to do with New Orleans, Noel, anything, is last year when they were in the midst of that losing streak, the head coach had to sit up there and say, you know, winning, that's not something we're focusing on right now. We're just trying to get better. I was like, oh, my God, what a horrible way to think. We're not trying to win. We're just trying to get better.
So you're educators, both of you, right? It's the equivalent of saying, listen, guys, we really don't care. If you apply this to your real lives, we just want you to pass these standardized tests. We don't care if you learn. We don't care if you can read or write. Just pass this test, please. Why?
That's why I think it's going to be extremely important moving into this season, despite the fact that we know they're going to be terrible, that tone, and that's going to be set from Hanky, Brett Brown, who's the coach, down, moving on down, to set that tone as far as saying, no, we're trying to win games. We know we have a lot of talented young players, but we're trying to win games. I think if you go out there and spend some money in free agency, that will show the players that they're trying to win games. Like if they stand pat, don't trade that Ace Young or don't spend on that cap space, I think that's sending a message saying, you know what, we're just going to roll the ball out there and let y'all young boys run. That's what I'm saying.
You forget the message has already been sent when you draft a player you're not going to play. That was the first message.
Yes.
That was the first message. We're not trying to win this year. Oh, we're drafting another point guard. Now, of course, they traded him, but right now, you're not even communicating with your star. These are messages already being sent before the season starts. I'm like, we're losing.
The analogy that you made was just spot on because – when you're parenting or, again, like being an educator, it's not what you say. It's what you do. The kids are always watching you, and they're watching what you do. And you can say all these things, but everything that the Sixers organization has done over these past few years, including drafting Embiid, says we're not trying to win. Everything says that. So they can come out there and be like, oh, I'm new, blah, blah. No, no, no. You drafted an injured center last year. You just drafted another injured center this year. So you can say you're new management and blah, 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 but you just did the exact same thing.
Yep. So we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting watching with that team, especially those two players.
No, it's not
going to
be very interesting. They're going
it's
to
not
suck.
Be interesting.
It's not going to be interesting at all. They're going to be horrible. Sorry, Craig. They're going to be horrible.
Craig,
Craig. We here for you, Craig. We here. You want to call us? And if you need consultation, we're going to have a drink for you. We there for you. We there for you, Craig. Keep your head up, Craig. Both of us. Well, all three of us. Well, speaking of, that's going to wrap it up for this edition. We end on a Sixers note. That's, I mean, that's
nice.
Crazy. That's
we didn't get cut off this time.
Just cut off.
Yes.
Nailed it.
So that's going to wrap it up before we get cut off. That's going to wrap it up for this edition of the Silk Review. Thanks, as always. Robert Sapp, Chad Quinn. See you soon on the next edition of the Silk Review. Take it easy.
All right, fellas. Have a good one.
All right, take care.
I will see you next time on the next edition of the Silk Review. Brazil wins in penalty kicks 3-2, so thankfully for the country and the sake of Brazil as a country that they were able to win that game. They lost that game. It would have been a catastrophic disaster. So they win. I will see you soon. Take it easy. Enjoy your weekend.